I'm Phil Parr, coming into your homes again, and it's time for another Blind Like Me, show 103 in the new year, 2006. It's hard to believe. You know, it'll be the month will be half over next week. Just amazes me. My time flies when you're having fun. Our guests are Douglas and Ann Foxworth from Austin, Texas. How are y'all today, both of you?
Great.
I'm very well, thank you. How about you?
Well, doing fine. I was just telling Ann what a gorgeous, it's 72 degrees outside. That is just weird for January, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
I'd
miss it from the winter.
I'd get in the pool if it wasn't. Of course, the water in the swimming pool is cold, but anyway, so you both live in Austin, Texas, and you're both fugitives of Texas School for the Blind.
That is correct.
Yes,
both
are.
Of you went there, and I think started in the 50s, started about the time I left, I believe.
Yeah, I started in 1958, September of that year.
And Ann, when did you start?
I came in 1960. I was in the sixth grade.
All right. Was Mr. Allen still there when you came?
Definitely.
Yes, he was.
And Doug, he was there. I know he was there when you came because he's the one that wrote me that letter and said, don't come back.
Oh.
So I know he was there when you got there, and both of you started out and learned Braille early, I guess, at an early age. And
I learned Braille when I was 6 years old.
And that was at the School for the Blind or not?
No, in public school.
Oh, really? So they sent you to public school for a while.
I was in public school in Fort Worth. We had a great program there for the blind kids in which we had a resource room. And we spent a lot of the day in the resource room learning our adaptive stuff like Braille and how to do math and all that kind of thing. And then the rest of the day we were in the classroom with the sighted kids. It was really a great way to get an education. But that all came to a screeching halt when my family moved out of Fort Worth and into a little town kind of nearby called Midlothian, Texas. And so we decided then for me to come to school here in Austin. So I was in the sixth grade, and I had all my Braille and everything when I got here, so I didn't have to learn that after I got to school at the School for the Blind.
So your father got a job some sort of a job in Midlothian or something, so that precipitated the move or what?
Yeah, my father was actually dying. He died shortly after I was 11, and he had to stop working, and that was why we had to leave the Fort Worth area.
So, and you could no longer go to that public school because it was physically...
too far away.
It was just too far away.
Yeah.
So they sent you to the blind school, and you did the first and second grade, you say, at a public school?
First through fifth grade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
First through fifth, and then that was quite a shock to you because you had been home. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters, and one of my sisters was very close to me in age, and so when I came to school in Austin to live 200 miles from my family,
yeah.
It was quite a shock, but I actually became comfortable with my situation pretty quickly, and I really loved it there.
Did you?
I did.
Let's see, I guess it's fifth grade. You would have been...
11 years old.
You'd have been 11 years old.
Yep.
And so they sent you to the blind school, and you thrived. You liked
did.
It there.
I loved it.
You already knew Braille. I don't remember who was teaching the fifth grade then. Miss Wynn, I think, was already gone, wasn't she?
Yeah, she had died before I got there. I was started out in the sixth grade, and Teresa Gorham was my homeroom teacher.
And so you
and also Doug's first love, Douglas.
It, well,
Douglas was in love with Miss Gorham.
Douglas, you were in love with Miss Gorham?
I was probably about 15 years old, and I used to take my letters from home to her to have her read them to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved her little voice and everything, and I was head over heels in love with Mrs. Gorham. And the funny thing is, I would imagine her and me going off together and being married and living happily ever after. And guess what I called her?
What?
Mrs. Gorham.
Mrs. Gorham.
That was after we were married, you know, and everything.
She was still Mrs. Gorham.
She is still Mrs. Gorham.
I don't know. I don't think that's unusual for a 15-year-old to have a crush on it. On one of your teachers. We've often discussed or thought about what. Of course, you couldn't see her. You're totally blind, right?
Not me. No, I have some partial vision.
So you knew what she looked like.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay, and you were attracted to her.
Oh, most definitely.
And she's, I wonder what age she would have been then.
I would guess Miss Gorham was probably in her mid to late 40s.
Really?
Time.
Now, that is unusual. Mid to late 40s.
Probably so, yeah.
And you were 15.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of a very bad joke, which I'm going to skip. But that's good that you but you had been at the blind school now since you were first grade, Douglas.
No, I went through from the first through the sixth in public schools in Pasadena, Texas.
So you both had a kind of a similar experience in that you did the first few grades in public school.
Yeah,
in Pasadena they did not have the resource things like Ann was talking about.
Uh-huh.
They did have large print books for us, and in the special education class I was in, at that time my vision was kind of good enough that if I got real close to the book, I could kind of read it. But in the sixth grade, it started becoming quite evident that I could no longer see well enough to read those large print books. And my parents had gotten in touch with a social worker out of Houston, I guess it was. Her name was Barbara Hoffman. And she told them about the School for the Blind in Austin. And so they immediately got things together to get me sent here. And at the age of 13, I came here into the School for the Blind. And Mrs. Lena Lewis, or Miss Lena Lewis,
yes,
at that time, taught me Braille. And I learned I was proficient in grade 2 Braille in about 6 weeks' time.
But they had not taught you Braille in the public school, you said,
I don't think they even knew what Braille was.
Really?
In Pasadena back in those days. This was the early to mid-50s.
Lena Lewis, and that was, at that time, that room was called the Opportunity Room.
That's correct.
And they took you there. Lena Lewis was my third grade teacher.
Wow.
I had her in the third grade back in 1948.
Uh-huh.
So she was really old.
She really was.
She was. She was an unusual lady in that she kind of had a dual personality, or I always thought of her. She was real harsh at times, and then at times she was just the sweetest, nicest, most wonderful, caring individual you'd ever be around, and 15 minutes later she was just a nasty bitch, you know.
Since she was the age she was, maybe she was going through the change of life.
Well, if that's true, she went through it for 30 years, because I had her in 48 and she didn't seem to have changed, but I loved her. All basically she was a bright spot in as opposed to her brother, who was nuts. But we'll get into that.
He was a legend in his own mind.
Boy, he was. He was a strange, very strange human being.
Yeah.
So, Doug, you had pretty good vision at one time, right?
Yes, I did.
And you still have some of that left? You still?
Yeah, I do. Mostly in my left. I was born with cataracts.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get to me until I was, surgically speaking, until I was about 8. My father couldn't admit that one of his 6 children was lesson.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they finally started doing surgeries on me when I was right at 8 years of age. And so that, you know, I did get some vision from that, but it wasn't a whole lot.
But if they'd known then what they know now, you would never have been blind at all.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I know it. I'd have had lens implants and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, they would have.
I'd have been possibly driving a car.
Probably so. They would have removed those cataracts and just gone. But then you'd never met Ann.
That's true.
You
would have never gotten to go to the school for the blind.
You'd have never met Lena Lewis. Think of all those things that no boy would have missed.
And by the way, I saw both sides of her as you were speaking.
Yeah.
Just a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, it's amazing that she was bipolar. They'd call her bipolar now.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
That's what she would be, bipolar. Now, Anne, have you ever had it? Have you had any ever experienced vision or not?
Light perception only.
And that's all?
That's it.
So you don't know colors, and you see like I do. You don't see anything.
Right.
Except maybe light perception.
It's light and dark, yeah.
All right, so back to you, Ann, for just a minute. So you came to the blind school, already knew Braille, so you dropped right into the sixth grade to junior high and fit right in the girls' dormitory. They put you in cottage A or B? Put you in B. I guess that's right. The junior high girls were all in B.
I was 11 years old.
And Mr. Allen was still there. How long was he there after you came? When did they start liberating?
I think that he left, and a new superintendent, John Best, came on board, I believe, in about 1963 or 4.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were there. F.G. Tackard was still there.
Oh, my gosh, yes. A diabolical person.
He was.
Diabolical.
They fuss at me for talking about the blind school and how bad it was. Because a lot of people had good experiences at school. My friend Tim Hindle, do you know Tim? Do you know of Tim Hindle?
No.
Tim Hindle is a graduate of Batavia School in New York. Well, he just had a wonderful experience at the blind school. And he can't understand why I hated it, why I couldn't. And one of the reasons I hated it was because of people like F.G. Tackard, who seemed to be bent on making my life miserable. Did anybody else get that impression from him?
Yes, he was harsh.
He was.
Cruel man.
His main thrust seemed to be to keep you from having a relationship with a member of the opposite sex.
Oh, yeah.
I always feared that, what did they think, we were going to get married and blind children.
Blind offspring.
That they'd have to support. That's kind of what I thought. I don't know.
I always felt like it was just a control
freak
sort of a thing with a lot of the folks there. We had Bob Hill. I don't know if he was there when you were there.
Oh, yes, he was.
Campus life supervisor, and the meaner man never lived. And but in spite of all of these terrible, cruel people that we had around us, I really loved being there. We raised each other. We didn't have parents to love us and parents to go to with questions. And I've always told people that we were actually abused, some kids were physically abused. I never was, but some were. But not only physical abuse, but certainly deprivation and mental, emotional abuse. But in spite of all of that, I enjoyed my time there because of the other kids that I was with. And a few teachers. We had some wonderful teachers as well. And I wouldn't want to leave those folks out, because the teachers we had who did care about our life and our education were there.
I'm so glad to hear you say what you just said, because you're parroting or saying the same thing that I've been saying. I've done 102 or 3 of these shows, and every time we talk about blind schools, I tell them how bad my experience was. I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing it. But you just said what I've been saying. There were some bright spots, but by and large, you were psychologically abused as a child there.
Yes. It has factored in most of my life.
Yeah.
In some way or other, unfortunately.
When I get up at night, sometimes I have to tell myself, "Hey, Phil, this is your house. It's all right for you to be up at 2:30 in the morning. Ms. Young is not going to say anything to you. You're not going to be made to sit by your bed for the rest of your life. It's okay. It's your house. If you want to go read from 2:30 to 4 in the morning, that's okay. Nobody cares. Phil, it's all right. No, nobody's going to." And I'm serious. I'm kidding, laughing about it, but that's absolutely... I dreamed about the blind school for 15 years after I left.
I still dream about it. Usually it's on fire when I dream about it.
Usually it's what now?
There being fires there a lot.
Fires?
Yeah. I don't know why.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's strange. Now, Douglas, I guess your experience was similar, right?
Pretty much so. being on the being one of the boys, you know, we were segregated there by sex, and there was some pretty tough physical things that went on from some of those people, like Mr. Hill, for example. He loved to do cruel things like put a boy on punishment, making what they used to call walking the pole.
You mean where he puts a pole with his arms crossed behind his shoulders?
Exactly.
I spent hours doing that.
I'm sure
and
you did.
I only had to do that one time, and that was the only time I ever had to do it, and it was because, you know, back in those days, we only had one television station here in Austin.
Yeah.
And Elvis Presley was coming on this particular afternoon after school, and so a bunch of us boys got together and were able to talk the health father into letting us sit there and watch Elvis on the TV. Well, Mr. Hill came in and called us. And that television was not supposed to be turned on at that time of the day, and we were supposed to be outside the cottage. And so he made all of us walk the pole. I only had to do it for maybe an hour, 45 minutes, something like that. But I always tried to behave myself because I didn't want any of that punishment. I'd seen boys out there in the rain and the cold, lightning and thunder going on and one thing and another, and I just didn't want to have to be.
But you had permission from your house parent to do what you were doing.
Yes,
watch.
Yes.
Yet he superseded the...
Exactly.
The house parent and said, "No, you can't do that."
That's right. Because he was the top dog as far as the house parents were concerned.
Do you remember in front of the main building, there was just a gigantic field that stretched from the boys' side to the girls' side, and I think it was bisected by a sidewalk.
It sure was.
Yes.
That sidewalk was no man's land, and you better not, no girl or no boy better be seen on that sidewalk.
I don't remember what I did to deserve this punishment, but I remember the year it was. It was 1955, and I was 14 years old. And whatever I had done, Mr. Hill didn't think I ought to be, should have been doing it. So he put me 2 hours in the afternoon from the time I got out of P.E. till supper, crawling around on my hands and knees, picking up rocks out of the boys' side of that field. And I did it for about a half hour one day, and I finally just said, "I'm not going to do this. You can't make me, and I'm not going to do it."
Wow.
And he never did back down. He'd come about once a week and come to my room and roust me about it. "Why aren't you out there picking up rocks?" And I just said, I'm just not going to do that. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do that. And, of course, they finally expelled me.
He used to make the boys... who were caught smoking before 16 years old.
Yeah.
He used to make them eat a cigarette and with salt on it, so it would make them really sick, which could have poisoned them with nicotine. Eating a cigarette is just not, you know, it's pretty dangerous.
They'd put him in prison for that sort of thing nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where
he's never been allowed to do the thing that today to children that he did to us.
But that's where he ought to be, is in prison or worse.
He Douglas heard him threaten a little boy who was maybe 9 years old. He caught this child masturbating and said, "The next time I see that thing out, I'm going to cut it off." And I can just imagine that poor little boy being afraid to go to the bathroom. So he'd have to take it out, and then maybe Mr. Hill would come up, you know, behind him. He didn't explain anything about the masturbation. He just said, "If I ever see that thing out of your pants again, I'm going to cut it off." And he was diabolical. He really was.
So it got worse after I left, then?
I don't know. It was pretty bad.
All right, I'll tell you. Well, let's get off all this morbid stuff. Let's just take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the happy lives of Douglas and Ann Foxworth from Austin, Texas. I'm Phil Parr, back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me. Hang on. The Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want a nice house and as kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love. And Ann Foxworth, both of them live in Austin, Texas. And Doug, let's get back to you. High school, did you participate in track, or did you play in the band? What did you do?
I was my 10th grade year and my senior years, I was track manager. I've never been athletically inclined. I'm kind of lazy, I guess. But they let me be track manager because I used to like to go out there and dig up the football jump pits and scrape down the track and water the track, you know, to keep the cinders in place and that sort of thing. And I always enjoyed doing that. I liked getting out there with that water hose, mm-hmm. fresh air, and spraying that water all around, and I could smell the trees and stuff around. You remember that pecan orchard that used to be out there? Those trees would be in bloom and everything at in the spring of the year. And I'd be out there watering those broad jump pits and spade parking them and one thing and another. And it was just a lot of fun. But no, I never participated in any of the sports activities, nor did I participate in the band. Although in recent years, I have discovered that I have a talent for the flute. And so I play the flute a little bit now for my own entertainment.
Now, but then, let's see, was Bob Young was still the P.E. Instructor? Who was the P.E. instructor then?
It was Bob Young.
Bob Young was still there.
Yeah.
Don't get me off on Bob Young. Don't start, man. Just don't start me, because I'd kill him if he walked up my driveway, you know? I think he's dead, but...
He is dead. They planted a tree over there for him.
They ought to. I think
he died, though.
Well, it should have. I'd set fire to it. He was a nasty, mean son of a gun. But that pecan orchard was right next to the athletic field out there. They had a big athletic field with a big the long track, and then they got it went on back and they made a big circle track back there.
That's right.
And so you would water those tracks down and and take care of their take care of the athletic field for them.
Yeah, that's what I did, and I'd make sure that you know, for their shot put balls and that sort of thing, I'd make sure that all those were out there in place, and that sort of thing. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
You know, I think I've told this story before, but I'll repeat it. One of the funniest things I ever saw in my life. I don't know if they did this when you were there, but we'd have track meets in other schools, like the New Mexico school, Oklahoma school, Arkansas school would come and we'd have the track meet. And they'd try to act normal. They'd put out benches and they'd actually let the girls come over and watch you. They tried to make you, you know, tried to act like the school was just a normal place to be. They'd put benches out there and the girls would actually get to come and you could sit with one and you could, you know. And
one of my favorite days of the year.
Well, it was a great day. We got that one day when they tried to make it look like Texas School for the Blind was a wonderful thing. The other times, you know, if you looked at a girl or even talked to one, you couldn't look at them. If you talked to one, you were in threat of death.
Yeah.
These boys, they were running on the track, and the Oklahoma boy got at the wrong end of the track, and you could hear them coming, and you knew what was going to happen, and sure enough, they hit hard.
Crash.
And I, being the weird guy, of course, I just, you know, once I realized they weren't dead, I just died laughing, because you could hear them, you could hear them, you know, hooking them, and they were following that cable with their hand, you know, and anyway. That's terrible. I shouldn't tell it. But that track was great fun. In fact, I went back in the 60s and took my children, and we ran on that track for about 30 minutes. It was great.
Oh, fun.
Great fun. I took my kids, and they got to see Dad actually do something besides drink beer. Walk from the fridge to his chair. So you didn't do band, and you didn't do sports, but you found a place, found a little niche there that you could fit in, and that was athletic helper.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, one of the things that I got to do on that track meet day, and I just thought this was the most wonderful thing in the world, I got to wear a white suit. It was white pants and a white shirt. And I thought I was Mr. Somebody.
Well, you were at 16, 17 years old. You stood out there, you know.
Yeah.
This white thing that was to designate you as an official or something?
So it was to designate me as one of the, one of the people that worked the track.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And, of course, the helpers that I had, several boys that, worked with me, they got to wear those too. And so we sort of stood out. We were the only ones in all white.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody needed something or Bob Young needed something, you know, he was visually impaired too.
Sure.
And he could look and see one of us there and, you know, Foxworth, I need I need a shot put ball or something. Well, you know, it was real easy to distinguish us from the rest of the crowd.
Yeah, and you got to do that, and that made you feel.
It just made me feel the most important thing there was.
Your girlfriend probably wanted, made sure that she saw you in that, if she could see.
Yeah, I guess
if
so.
She saw you in that. All right, and what did you do in high school at the School for the Blind? Were you a music person, or what did you do?
Well, I was in the string ensemble.
Oh yeah.
From. I guess when I was 12, I started with lessons in viola.
And one of your bright spots was Dorothy, bless her heart, good enough.
Oh, absolutely.
She was a wonderful, sweet, I miss her, you know.
I do, too.
She was
I
just a,
both.
Both the good enoughs were wonderful. Did you go to the thing in Austin?
Oh, yeah.
The
memorial service that we didn't know about.
For Forrest Goodenough.
Yeah, we were doing that benefit, and... just to honor him and Mrs. Goodenough, and to name the auditorium at the school in their honor. And unbeknownst to us, at the time when we were actually having this wonderful, exciting, happy time to honor them, he was dying.
He had just passed away, I think, about 10 o'clock that morning.
10 or 11, something like that.
And we didn't know it.
Nope. But I was in string ensemble, and although I was not a very athletic person, I never did win anything for running or any of that. I loved tumbling and in square dance, and I was a cheerleader when I was a senior. But those were the most, when I was in a couple of other extracurricular little clubs and things.
Yeah, well, string ensemble got you to go. You were able to go different places that the band went, or that the string ensemble went and played it.
Oh yeah.
At some little things. So that got you some outside. Getting outside, and you got to spend 30 minutes to an hour a day with the delicious, beautiful Dorothy Goodenough.
Oh, yeah. Douglas and I were both in the chorus, and so we used to get to go on trips, sometimes short trips, to do performances with the chorus.
Yeah.
And Douglas stood behind me on the risers whenever we would perform, and when the teachers talked to us, he would stick his fingers in my ears.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Did you two know each other at school for the blind? Who wants to feel that sticking fingers in ears there, were you, Douglas?
Stuck his fingers in my ears, and then I would turn around to say, "Stop it," and I would get in trouble. He never got in trouble, and we dated a little bit, even in high school. But we were always very, very good friends.
And yeah. And you were both in the chorus, and so you got to see each other some.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But you were dating, you were partnered up with other people.
Well, yeah, part of the time we were. Most of the time, actually. We only dated, like really truly dating, going to a dance together for a short time.
Yeah, big date.
Yeah.
Yeah, he,
in the gym.
He got to come over to the cottage and walk you. I think we walked in couples, all walked, sort of in some sort of an orderly military kind of a fashion over to the gym. And we danced. They asked us to dance a little bit. And then about 9 o'clock, they'd give you a Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 10 o'clock, it was time
back to the cottage.
Buddy boy, you got to walk back to the cottage. And don't stop for a little smoochy face there, a little kissy face on the way. Because, all right. All right, keep it moving. All right.
Gosh.
It was tough times. Tough times. But you had other interests, love interests, that you thought you'd... Of course, Doug was going to marry this teacher.
Yeah.
And so...
I always had a boyfriend. I always had a boyfriend, and usually I stayed with a boyfriend for a long time, for a year or more sometimes.
Yeah, you'd make a decision to date somebody, and there wasn't a whole lot of changing, because we only had so many girls and so many guys.
There wasn't that much to pick from, really.
And there really wasn't that much to pick from. I'm trying with my left hand to find something here that I want to play for you and see if this means anything. Let me see if I can get this thing to work here. Let's punch this button and see if you recognize this sound here. Group one. How does that do, huh? You recognize that?
Yep.
Of course, that's the theme we use for the Blind Handyman Show, and we use that bell because I've talked to a lot of blind people, and I think all schools had those bell of some kind that they rang.
I think so.
To make you do whatever the heck you were going to do.
By the bell.
You did. You lived and died by the bell, and brother, you better obey it. Did both of you, Doug? Were your grades good? Did you do well academically?
No, I didn't, and it was because I didn't apply myself. I thought that it didn't matter what I did academically, and so I didn't really study. I didn't like to study, and my grades were very, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
If I made an A or a B, it was something from heaven. Mostly I was C's and D's, and once in a while an F.
Now, were you a sight-saving student?
No, I was Braille.
You were Braille. Lena Lewis, that's right, had taught you Braille, so you were Braille by then.
Uh-huh.
But you didn't see the benefits of academia. You didn't see why you should learn Spanish or typing or any of those kinds of things.
I could understand why I needed to learn typing, because that was, at that time, that was a means of communication with the sighted world. But as far as Spanish and geography, history and all that sort of thing, I just really saw no need in. Although I have to admit that if I could go back and redo my geography, geography is something that I love to talk about and figure out where places are and how they relate geographically to other parts of the world, I would soak that stuff up now if I could.
And they had these wonderful big maps that you could pull the pieces out of, you know. I don't know if they had a map of Europe and a map of Asia like that, but if they did, I'd love to see it.
I would too.
I've got the United States and Canada and the North American continent down pretty well, and South America, but I don't know the geography of Europe, and I'd like to, and Asia.
Remember those big old round globes?
Yes, sir, I do, with Braille on them.
Those were so neat, and I paid absolutely no attention to them.
Yeah, except seeing how fast you could spin them. That'd be about it, wouldn't it?
One of those big globes, the one that was in Miss Hancock's room, has found a new home in a store here in Austin called the Greater Earth Company or something like that. I think they sell like health foods or something. I'm not real sure. I've never been down there, but I found out that they have that big globe. They purchased it, I guess, through the state auction at some point when the school got rid of it. So we know where it is.
Man, I wonder what happened to those maps.
I don't know.
They didn't
be auctioned off. You know, all the state property that gets turned in and not used anymore is auctioned off.
How could they not use that globe in those big maps, though? Why would kids not need those now?
I don't know. But they're not there anymore.
Man, I don't either.
They have other kinds of maps now.
I guess they do. I guess, you know, even back then we had smaller maps that you could buy. I think I may have bought a little map that you could take the states out. Man, I excelled at those states' capitals and taking where those states were. I like that.
Yeah.
But, Doug, you didn't do well, but you did graduate. They did let you graduate.
I graduated in 1966.
Now, and how were your grades? I'm betting good. You did well, didn't you?
Well, I had mediocre. I did make it into the National Honor Society. And to this day, I don't know how come they chose me. But my grades were A's and B's and a few C's here and there. The main, I guess if you were to ask my teachers what was the main problem with Ann, it was my mouth. I was always getting in trouble for my mouth.
Oh, you mean that you were a rather sassy type of
I'm afraid I was. Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine that, can you?
I can.
I can, too, and I don't even know you, and I haven't talked to you 30 minutes, but I can see it. I can see it coming up Lamar Boulevard, right, you know. And so you say the National Honor Society, that's a little above mediocre.
Well, as I say, I really was surprised, and I still don't know why I was selected to be honored that way, because I didn't feel like I did that well in school.
Well, compared to Doug and I, you did wonderful. And
yes,
we, poor us, they had us down in the tuning department for half a day, every day, with Stafford McKinley. All right, we've got you both through high school. We want to get into what you did after school and tell the story of how you eventually got together, which I think happened recently by, I think, sometime in the 90s. Is that right?
Yes.
So you both have been married to other people.
I have been.
And have maybe a family?
I have kids, two kids.
You have
36 and 29 years old now.
36 and 29.
No grandchildren, unfortunately. I have granddogs.
Granddogs. Yeah. Hang on just a minute. We'll take a little short break and then come back. We're going to talk about life after the school for the blind. Back with Ann and Douglas Foxworth from Austin, Texas. I'm Phil Parr. We'll be right back. Hang on.
A trip to Walmart.
A window
is easy. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is BlindMySmart.com. Again, that's www.BlindMySmart.com.
Douglas and Ann Foxworth, residents of Austin, capital city of Texas, are with us, both of them graduates of TSB. Dougie said, I think, 66. And Ann, what year?
67.
So you were very close together. Now, Doug, what did you think you'd do when you got out of school? Do you have any idea? And what did you do?
Well, I've always been interested in anything to do with radio or electronics, that nature, you know, broadcasting or microphone or whatever. And I used to think that I would go into being a DJ on a radio station because people have told me that I had the voice for it and all that sort of thing. Well, that didn't work out because in those days they weren't hiring too many blind people to work at radio stations. They just didn't think we could do it.
It was a hard thing to get into.
Yes.
I had the same thing.
So I got a job at the Lighthouse for the Blind in Houston, and I worked there for about 3 years, and then they had an electronics assembly course, which I took and just ate it up. It was to get us prepared to get a job in, like, a factory or, you know, an electronics assembly place. And I was the only person out of that class of, I think it was 10 or 12 people that got a job. And I went to work for Western Electric. And I worked there for 10 years and got bored with that, got tired of it. So I quit and I went to work then for Burger King for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Austin and...
Wait a minute, hold it. You're not getting by Burger King that quick. What did you do at Burger King?
I was their grill man. I ran the burger, the patties, and the buns through the grill.
So you cooked. You were the grill man.
Yeah.
And you had enough sight to do that?
Yeah, sure did.
And that paid minimum wage?
Oh, yeah, something, $2 and something an hour at that time. So this was back in 92, and then I got tired of that and quit it, and the lady that was running the manager told me when I was leaving, she said, if you ever want to come back to work here as a grill operator, just let me know.
That's amazing.
I never did. So anyway, I moved to Austin, and here in 92.
What year are we in now? What year are we up to now when you moved?
1992.
It was early 90s when you worked for Burger King.
Yeah, it was 91 when I worked there.
And this was in Houston?
Houston, yeah.
Yeah, so you decided, chuck it all, I'm going to move to Austin.
Exactly. And that's what I did. And, of course, Ann and I got together again in 93. We had a radio reading service here. Well, we still do have it. And in 94... the man that operated the thing, he was a brittle diabetic, and he finally passed away, complications of his diabetes, and the thing had gone off the air for a couple of years, and Austin Council of the Blind owns it, and they asked me if I would, in about 96, if I would take the thing over and try to get it back on the air, which I did do. And I got it back on the air and everything. And that's where I work now. I run the radio reading service.
Well, and I understand my friend John Conley from Dallas came down and taught you some things or coached you. I think he was working at North Texas Radio Reading Service.
Yeah, he was familiar with the old Gates board that we use over there.
Yeah.
It still works, by the way. And so he came and spent a day with me there in the studio and kind of showed me what switches to push and which way to push them and
mm-hmm.
how to work the pots, the volume controls
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And so he spent a day with me over there. And
because you had never done any actual radio. You just wanted to do radio.
That's right.
You'd never were able to find a radio job.
That's exactly right.
But they brought you to this this radio reading service. Now, are you still using that Gates board?
Yes.
Well, that is archaic technology.
No kidding. It's a boat anchor.
It is.
It works.
I had one and gave it away about 5 years ago.
Wow.
Had a Gates. I think the Gates one I had was called a President. Had the five pots on each end and the 2 meters in the middle in Q-circuit. Is that the one you have or not?
No, this has 1 meter on the right-hand end of it.
Okay.
And it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Seven pots.
Seven pots.
And so you're still using it. It is solid state.
Yes.
And yeah, they need to buy you some equipment. My, we don't
have a lot of money.
The radio reading service doesn't have any money.
It belongs to the Austin Council of the Blind.
Yeah.
And you know the ACB chapters. We have the most money of anybody in the state, but we do run so many programs, and I'll tell you about those when it's my turn to talk. But we don't have a whole lot of money to buy new equipment.
Well, we'll make it your turn to talk right now. Tell us about them.
Some of the programs that we run, my favorite program, of course, Doug's favorite is the reading service, but my favorite is a program that I initiated about 11 years ago. It's called Read With Me, and we purchase Braille print storybooks for children, blind children in the greater Austin area, or blind parents who want to read with their sighted children.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's a pretty loose program. Basically, people can request books from us, and we give them as gifts. And most of the books that we purchase are for blind children, and we get our referrals from the Division for Blind Services Children's caseworkers. They actually go out and find out what the kids want, and then they just send us a list of what books they want because they can't share names, of course.
Yeah.
And then the teachers over at the Texas School for the Blind will get big orders together, and we buy books for the kids that are there. And these books are for the children to keep. I remember that I never had a storybook as a child that I could actually read myself that was mine to keep.
Mm-hmm.
I always had to send them back to the library. And I got my very first book that was, you know, my book to keep. It was a mystery, and I got it through a little reading program that APH had for a while. And I was 34 years old before I had my very own book that I could keep. And
really?
It was a thrill to me to have that book.
Well, I don't think that hurt your psyche or anything, but that is kind of weird because sighted kids had all they wanted when they were little kids.
Oh, yeah, all the books you want. And we had a lot of print storybooks in my house when I was little, but
yeah.
Nothing that I could actually read.
Nothing that belonged to little Ann.
And we do a lot of other, we provide money for the prom over at the School for the Blind. We usually give them $1,500 a year. They've had a lot of their funds cut. And so we help out with their prom every year. And we have a program where somebody can request adaptive software and sometimes even hardware. And if they are not eligible to get it through the agency, then we will certainly consider buying things like that for people.
Sometimes the council buys those sorts of things for people. Mm-hmm. Now, this reading program, are these books read for children, are they read on the radio reading service?
No, they're just storybooks. They come from a place called Seedlings Braille Books for Children.
Mm-hmm.
And we get them from National Braille Press as well. And they're just, you know, little Braille. They have Braille and print in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to promote is families reading together.
Of course, it's so much easier now to do Braille with computers and things like that. But let's just for a second, what did you do when you got out of high school? You went and got a college degree, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
Be darn.
I didn't because when I was 19 years old, I got pregnant and got married in that order. And back then, you know, I couldn't tell my mother that I was pregnant unless I told her that I was married.
Yeah.
So I got married when I was 19, and my son was born when I was 19, almost 20. And I went into the vending stand program, and then...
Now, this was a blind boy, blind man?
Yes.
And so you all got married.
Had to. You know, you couldn't not get married and be pregnant back then.
Well, I understand.
At least if you had my mother, you couldn't.
Well, no, you couldn't. But I understand. I went through a similar experience, which I'll tell you about someday. But anyway, I stayed married to her 13 years, too.
Well, I was married to him for like maybe 5 years. And I went through the BEP program.
Mm-hmm.
But I was only about 18 when I went through that, so... they wouldn't have been able to place me, actually, in a location until I was 21. They failed to tell me that when they put me in the program. They wanted me to, you know, they said, well, you can go to college or do BEP, you know, and I said, I'll just do that. And then I went through a little medical transcription class that they had in Houston. And of course, I got married, and I had my son. And then... I actually did take over a vending location in a car dealership at the age of 20. I slipped in under the wire there.
All right, where was this?
It was in an Oldsmobile dealership in Houston.
In Houston, Texas?
Uh-huh. And then my husband and I moved to Fort Worth, which is where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were married for about 5 years. And divorced, and I was still in the vending stand program. And then I met and married another man who was sighted, and he and I were actually married for 17 years, and we had a daughter. And during the time after I left the BEP because I had gotten married and was about to start, you know, with another baby.
Yeah.
So during the time that I was married to him, the only outside the home work that I did was I worked as a volunteer in a hospital for about 3 years, and I also worked as the receptionist at the Fort Worth Lighthouse for the Blind for about 5 years. And then I, after 17 years of marriage, I left my husband and I moved to Austin. And by this time, my son was, you know, gone and out of the house.
Yeah, both kids were grown and gone.
Yeah, my daughter was, she was still at home,
mm-hmm.
but she preferred to stay in Fort Worth, where all her friends were.
All right, so you moved to Austin, and tell us about how you and Doug met each other again.
Doug was here when I got here, and we were both happy to discover that the other was here, because we hadn't seen each other for about 25 years, and we were just great friends, and so we started dating, and I moved here in 1993, and we got married in 1995, but when I moved here, I was entering the Chris Cole Rehab Center Career Guidance Program so that I could find a job, and I ended up finding a job at Chris Cole, and the first job that I had there was a part-time job as a secretarial type person. It was the Texas Commission for the Blind back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never, or the commission had never hired a blind person to be in a secretarial position until I was hired. And a woman named Marilyn Buck hired me, and I've always been grateful to her for that. When I had worked in that position for about 5 years, I was offered the opportunity to apply for a rehab teaching position there in the center, and I was the first rehab teacher ever hired by the agency without a degree. I worked in that position for I guess about 3 or 4 years, and then a position came open in the Braille production unit there at the agency, and so I went and worked in that unit for about 2 years. And then my current position came open, and so I applied for this position and was very, very honored to be selected because competition was very heavy. So my current position is Braille. I'm called a Braille consultant, but that really what it means is that I'm responsible for making sure that all of our about 70 rehab teachers across the state have their Braille skills in place so that they can teach Braille. And, of course, I have to do a lot of promotion of Braille because, as all our listeners know, people are generally resistant to learning Braille if they're newly blind. They think it's too hard.
Yeah.
And so a large part of what I do is promotion of Braille and staff training and then testing.
So you're the state coordinator for the Commission for the Blind, or they don't call it the Commission, but for Braille, for the teaching of Braille.
Yes.
Of all the VI teachers, right?
The teachers who work for our agency.
Okay, the teachers who work for the, what do they call it now?
The Division for Blind Services.
It's the Division of Blind Services.
Yes.
And you do this statewide, so you travel some.
Of 50%.
How do you have a driver that?
Mostly I fly.
Really?
I fly places. Yeah. Occasionally I have to ride the bus, which I absolutely hate.
Oh yeah.
And I had a guide dog up until October when she died, and I'm waiting for a new one right now.
So you're using a cane.
Using my cane. Yep.
Well, folks, I hate to do this, but we've killed an hour.
Wow.
And could probably kill some more. Douglas, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your input, and I look forward to meeting you someday, sir.
Well, thank you, Phil, for having me on your program. I've really enjoyed it.
And, Ann, good luck, and if you ever get to East Texas, give me a call, and I'll buy dinner.
Great. Thanks for having
me on,
Phil.
Ann and Douglas Foxworth from Austin, Texas, thank both of you, and I'll talk with you. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.